must be so unexpectedly terminated. But I must ride to put down an uprising in the provinces as soon as I leave the Hall of Karma. You are aware of how these things spring up the moment a ruler's back is turned. So while I should have liked to spend another week beneath your roof, I fear that this pleasure must be postponed until another time. If any ask after me, tell them to seek me in Hades.
Hades, my lord?
It is the southernmost province of my kingdom, noted for its excessively warm weather. Be sure to phrase it just so, especially to the priests of Brahma, who may become concerned as to my whereabouts in days to come.
I'll do that, my lord.
And take especial care of the boy Dele. I expect to hear him play again on my next visit. Hokana bowed low and was about to begin a speech, so the prince decided upon that moment to toss him the final bag of coins and make an additional comment as to the wines of Urath, before mounting quickly and shouting orders to his men, in such a manner as to drown out any further conversation. Then they rode through the gateway and were gone, leaving behind only the physician and three warriors, whom he was to treat an additional day for an obscure condition having to do with a change of climate, before they rode on to catch up with the others. They passed through the town, using side streets, and came after a time to the roadway that led up toward the palace of the Masters of Karma. As they passed along its length, Siddhartha exchanged secret signs with those 36 of his warriors who lay in hiding at various points off in the woods. When they had gone half the distance to the palace, the prince and the 8 men who accompanied him drew rein and made as if to rest, waiting the while for the others to move abreast of them, passing carefully among the trees. Before long, however, they saw movement on the trail ahead. 7 riders were advancing on horseback, and the prince guessed them to be his 6 lancers and the Shan. When they came within hailing distance, they advanced to meet them.
"Who are you?" inquired the tall, sharp-eyed rider mounted upon the white mare. "Who are you that dares block the passage of Prince Siddhartha, binder of demons?"
The prince looked upon him, muscular and tanned in his mid-20s, possessed of hawk-like features and a powerful bearing. And he felt suddenly that his doubts had been unfounded, and that he had betrayed himself by his suspicion and mistrust. It appeared from the lithe physical specimen seated upon his own mount that Brahma had bargained in good faith, authorizing for his use an excellent and sturdy body, which was now possessed by the ancient Shan.
"Lord Siddhartha," said his man, who had ridden at the side of the Lord of Irabek, "it appears that they dealt fairly. I see naught amiss about him."
"Siddhartha!" cried the Shan. "Who is this one you dare address with the name of your master? I am Siddhartha, binder of—"
With that he threw his head back, and his words gurgled in his throat. Then the fit hit the Shan. He stiffened, lost his seating, and fell from the saddle. Siddhartha ran to his side. There were little flecks of foam at the corners of his mouth, and his eyes were rolled upward.
"Epileptic!" cried the prince. "They meant me to have a brain which had been damaged."
The others gathered around and helped the prince minister to the Shan until the seizure passed and his wits had returned to his body.
"What happened?" he asked.
"Treachery," said Siddhartha.
"Treachery, O Shan of Irabek. One of my men will convey you now to my personal physician for an examination. After you have rested, I suggest you lodge a protest at Brahma's reading room. My physician will treat you at Hokana's, and then you will be released. I am sorry this thing happened. It will probably be set aright. But if not, remember the last siege of Kapil, and consider us even on all scores. Good afternoon, Brother Prince." He bowed to the other, and his men helped the Shan to mount Hokana's bay, which Siddhartha had borrowed earlier. Mounting the mare, the prince observed their departure, then turned to the men who stood about him, and he spoke in a voice sufficiently loud to be heard by those who waited off the road.
"The 9 of us will enter. 2 blasts upon the horn, and you others follow.
If they resist, make them wish they had been more prudent, for 3 more blasts upon the horn will bring the 50 lancers down from the hills if they be needed. It is a palace of ease and not a fort where battles would be fought. Take the masters prisoner. Do not harm their machineries or allow others to do so. If they do not resist us, all well and good. If they do, we shall walk through the palace and hall of the masters of Karma like a small boy across an extensive and excessively elaborate anthill. Good luck. No gods be with you. And turning his horse, he headed on up the road, the 8 lancers singing softly at his back. The prince rode through the wide double gate, which stood open and unguarded. He set immediately to wondering concerning secret defenses that Strake might have missed. The courtyard was landscaped and partly paved. In a large garden area, servants were at work pruning, trimming, and cultivating. The prince sought after weapon emplacements and saw none. The servants glanced up as he entered, but did not halt their labors. At the far end of the courtyard was the black stone hall. He advanced in that direction, his horsemen following, until he was hailed from the steps of the palace itself, which lay to his right. He drew rein and turned to look in that direction. The man wore black livery, a yellow circle on his breast, and he carried an ebony staff. He was tall, heavy, and muffled to the eyes. He did not repeat his salutation, but stood waiting. The prince guided his mount to the foot of the wide stairway. "I must speak to the masters of Karma," he stated.
"Have you an appointment?" inquired the man.
"No," said the prince, "but it is a matter of importance."
"Then I regret that you have made this trip for nothing," replied the other.